a good friend. Thank you.
Good morning to you all, our guests who are here this morning. You are all welcome. And in terms of our program, we were supposed to start with the forensic audit investigation and then go to SARS and Who Am I Online, and then end up with refugee reception offices later. Now we are changing our program slightly. The Deputy Minister has requested that because of the amount of work that they are having at their office, requested that they be the first people to make their presentation. And then after that, we will follow the program according to the way we have it here. Will that be in order, honorable members? I take it we agree. Okay. We will give the deputy minister to take us through the last agenda item, the status of the refugee reception offices in the country. That will be followed by the sequence of the agenda. Honorable members, before we start, we apologize to all the people who are here who are maybe not able to get seated because of the small venue. We do have a problem of venues in Parliament. But they will love all members of Parliament to be seated inside. And then the presenters and the officials of the department to occupy the two spaces. And where people are standing, I will request that we get maybe seats from other offices for people to be able to sit. Without any waste of time, and Deputy Minister, you are all welcome, DG, with your department, and the sister is here also, and all the people who are here to make a presentation, you are all welcome. We will first start to give the opportunity to the Deputy Minister to brief us on the status of refugee reception offices in the country. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
Good morning, Chairperson and members, other guests. Thank you very much, firstly, Chairperson, for acceding to our request this morning to begin in a different order. Before I begin, I know that the Minister has submitted an apology to yourself. May I please also reiterate that apology? As you know, our minister is very concerned every time we appear before the portfolio committee that we should be present, and certainly she makes an effort to do so. Unfortunately, her absence today has been unavoidable. We have with us today, it seems literally, probably two-thirds of the management of Home Affairs. We were taking a briefing last night, chairperson, from a journalist who had gone to Libya, and he was explaining how bombs just drop from the sky while people are doing ordinary things. And I thought to myself, today if a bomb drops here, we would have no Home Affairs, because we have the DG. We have the Deputy DG Immigration Services, we have Acting DDG ISS. To my extreme right, we have the CFO, we have the head of the Western Cape province. And to the back, I see we also have the immigration office represented, and certainly asylum seeker management represented as well. And if I can't see further back, it's because I'm losing my eyesight. So we have been asked to come here to deal with three different issues, Chairperson, and I'm going to make some opening remarks, and those presentations will be dealt with by different people. Firstly, we're going to start with the refugee centers, the status of the refugee centers. It's not a very long input, but that will be dealt with by DDG McKay, who, as you know, is our Director General Immigration Services, under which asylum seeker management resides. With regard to the forensic audit report in the smart farm, I was made to understand that the department, as well as CICA, have both looked at the forensic audit report, and that the presentation will be made on behalf of both institutions by Ms. Phoebe Potthieser from CICA. And then the Who Am I online input will be done by the DG. You would recall, Chairperson, that this was an input that the portfolio committee had stayed over at the time that the department presented its strategic plan, and the reason being, I assume, is that the portfolio committee wanted to spend some more quality time on this matter, and that will be dealt with by the DG. So without any further ado, I'm going to hand over to DDG McKay to begin the presentation on the status of the refugee centers, and then thereafter we would request there to be questions, and we will all try and respond to those questions, any questions that members have to put. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and officials and guests in the House. Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, there are currently five designated refugee reception offices in five of the nine provinces in the country, and they are located in Musina in Limpopo, in Cape Town in the Western Cape, in Port Elizabeth in the Eastern Cape, in Durban in KwaZulu-Natal, in Marabastat in Tswane or Gauteng, particularly in Tswane and Gauteng, and the Pretoria Showgrounds also in Tswane, which is our satellite offices which houses the previous Crown Mines operations. The location of these offices in all the provinces is in the city centers. On March 25, 2011, a court order instructing the department to close the Johannesburg Refugee Reception Office within a period of 60 days was issued by the High Court. The department took a decision to relocate the Crown Mines operation to the Pretoria showground. And currently, all clients that were serviced from Crown Mines are expected to report to the center located in the Pretoria showground. A process has been designed to inform all concerned, including staff and clients, on relocation. And the department has had to reprioritize its resources to accommodate this unplanned relocation. The relocation process has been designed in such a way that there is minimal disruption and compromise to the services to the client. With regard to our existing offices, Honorable Chairperson and members, we thought we would give you just a status in terms of our lease agreements in these offices. In Johannesburg, we occupy a public building, and that office was the Johannesburg or the Crown Mines Refugee Reception Office, which the court ordered us to move out by the 31st of May 2011, and those operations have been relocated to Pretoria. We have another office in Pretoria, which is called our Marabastad building, or our Marabastad Refugee Reception Office. This is a government-owned building, and it is the main office of our Pretoria Refugee Reception Operation. We have another one office in Pretoria, that is at the Pretoria Showground. It's on a lease agreement, and the renting is on a month-to-month basis whilst we are looking for a permanent alternative to open another office in the Pretoria area. Cape Town, we are renting a private building, and in this Maitland building site, the court has also ordered us to move out, and we are basically renting on a month-to-month basis whilst we are also looking for an alternative where to move this office. Port Elizabeth, we are renting a building or leasing a building there as well, which expires on the 30th of November 2011, and it is still in operation. And in Durban, we are also renting or leasing a building which expires on the 31st of October 2011, and it is also still in operation. And in Mussina, the lease there expires on the 31st of August 2013, and it is still operating, but requires, of course, additional capacity. Of these, if I may mention, Chairperson, the office in Mussina, we have already received notice from the businesses around that center that they intend to approach court to have it closed, as well as the PE office, the Port Elizabeth office as well. There are threats by businesses in the vicinity to approach the High Court to have our services terminated in these centers. Chairperson, we thought we would also share with the House the factors that contribute to the unprecedented demand for service we have seen over the past couple of years, this is our third year, that we actually have a high demand for services for refugee or for asylum seeker documentation. And Chairperson, the factors that contribute to this is firstly the Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs conditions in the Section 22 permit, which actually undermines the Immigration Act and acts as a pull factor. If I can explain this, Chairperson. The conditions, the Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs made a decision after the Wachanuka case, which went to the High Court, that all asylum seeker permits, or all asylum seeker permits that are issued by the department will be endorsed by the condition that the asylum seeker has the right to work and study in South Africa. Now, we know that it is only the Immigration Act which regulates the issuance of work permits and study permits and other immigration type permits in South Africa. And what we in effect have here, Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, is a free work permit for anyone entering South Africa. So everyone that is issued with a Section 22 has the right to work and study, and it is a pull factor for economic migrants from the region and further afield to come into South Africa and claim asylum, knowing that they will receive such a document that gives them the right to work and study in South Africa. There is also, honorable members, the perceived sustainable livelihood or better socioeconomic opportunities in South Africa. And these attract economic migrants who clog the asylum seeker system and result in unmanageable demands at our centers. The challenges faced by the country in the management of its borders is another factor that contributes to people streaming into the country. It's basically the porous nature of our border line, which allows for people to enter into the country undetected. Also, Chairperson, South Africa is used as a transit to the world beyond. Some of the asylum seekers and refugees that we have in South Africa see this as a stopping point where they sojourn and stay for a couple of years, amass funds or money, which then puts them in a position to move further afield to either Canada, Australia, the United States, or some European destination. Also, Chairperson, another factor which contributes to this is the absence of a regional approach in managing asylum seekers and refugees. Currently, there is no regional approach within SADC in terms of how to deal. There are discussions at the SADC level, but these discussions have not been concretized into a plan or a program on how to deal with the management of asylum seekers and refugees in the country, within the region. Chairperson, we thought we would also share with the portfolio committee just a map of South Africa showing all of our ports. These are marked from there, number one, right up here along our borders with Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Swaziland, and Lesotho. And these are all our border posts. The trend, Honorable Chairperson, is that we have about 90 or 95% of all people coming into South Africa with asylum seekers come through the northern borders. They come from Zimbabwe. They track from the north, come through Zimbabwe, enter at Beitbridge, or they enter along the porous borderline. They come through Mozambique, come through our port of entry there with Libombo or Zano Garcia, or they come through the porous border. They come through Swaziland, and this is the areas where most of our refugee or asylum seekers are. Our asylum centers, Chairperson, is located one in the Western Cape, one in the Eastern Cape, one in KwaZulu-Natal, two in Mpumalanga, and one in Musina in Limpopo. So we can see, I'm sorry, in KwaZulu-Natal, my apologies, and one in KwaZulu-Natal, and Gauteng over there, two in Gauteng over there. And, Chairperson, we can see that these centers are really located far from where the actual asylum seekers are coming into the country. That is then, so we are in the process of looking at options and discussing options. These are really not concretized, it hasn't been finalized yet, but one of the options, because our current bill before Parliament makes provision or says that the asylum seekers now have 5 days to reach our port, our asylum seeker centers. One of the considerations we are looking at is looking at locating these centers along the borders over there where people would have access to. But this, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, is not a decision yet. It is one of many options that we are considering in the management of asylum seekers in the country moving forward. But as you could see, it makes sense in terms of having it near the border areas over there and having people tracking all the way down from Limpopo into Cape Town to apply for asylum, or in the Eastern Cape or in KwaZulu-Natal. Chairperson, the current consideration for refugee reception officers, the court orders that have been served to Cape Town and Crown Mines has resulted in the closure of operations in Johannesburg. And there are also, like I said, threats to evict us in Messina and Port Elizabeth. And the refugee reception officers are situated inappropriately in inappropriately zoned areas, in industrial areas, where we get challenges from businesses saying that our clients are a nuisance factor and affect their businesses and their clientele visiting their office. And also there is an ever-increasing demand for services leading to complaints of nuisance by business owners. So these, Chairperson, are the issues or the current issues that bedevil the asylum seeker process, and we thought that this is what we would share with the Portfolio Committee. And we will now take any questions or comments on the presentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, DTG. Honourable Members, it's time for questions, for clarity and other questions. I notice Honourable Mosela, followed by Honourable Gump, Honourable Lovemore, Honourable Peter Kumaduna, Honourable Tibet, in that order, please, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chairperson, to the Deputy Minister, and of course the presentation by the TTG. It's quite an interesting conversation to have, talking about how best to manage the refugee reception centers, and of course the plan in which we can try and manage the porous borders that we have. But when we dealt with the strategic report, performance report of the department last week, it was very clear that in the absence of simple things such as a telephone line in an office of a border, you know, in the border post, where it was reported that some of the offices there's no telephone line, and also in the absence of the border management agency, which we currently rely only on the PCOCC, that does not even have capacity nor the clear mandate to manage their affairs. So we are going to continue having this kind of problem. So I think it then calls on us, the person, to most probably under the current system now, where you see that most of these migrants are not necessarily asylum seekers per se, they are economic migrants, and it has been proven. So it then calls on us to look at how best to manage the manner in which we resource this whole component of asylum seeker. I looked in, for instance, where the oversight, very interesting oversight, Deputy Minister, yesterday, which I, of course, would have loved to see members of the executive giving some guidance, yourself and the Minister, on the approach at the reception, the refugee reception centers, where you literally have a situation where everybody that comes in, all the applications that they get, it's clear that they are either looking for a work permit or a job or a, you know, or a study permit. So the section 22 says you can go and get work, you can look for work, you can study. Now remember, we've got permit, work permit, and study permit. So the challenge therein is that if you have a situation where your permitting is clogged with high numbers of backlogs, then people run and jump into this situation. And we're told that there are nationalities that, for instance, jump in where there's not even a war in those countries, or where democracy has been proven to have been stable over time. But people go in because they are frustrated by the permitting system. So I think that is a point that is important to make. But also, given the fact that we had an oversight, I became very worried when we were told by the officials that, look, obviously it does not mean you must go and suspend him. But it says you want to look into moving the officers into the border post, towards the border lines, and you've confirmed that. But, you know, the conditions under which the employees work under, it is very worrying. And I would like to really, really take that matter very seriously. You have women there who, in the main, are busy in ensuring that they are safer and warmer where they live. But where we've been yesterday, it's very cold. When it's raining, it rains inside. So you kind of have a situation where you want people to be effective, efficient, and on time, and be productive under those circumstances. And we're also told that the problems around the absenteeism are worrying this department. So maybe those might be the contributing factor. And of course, Chairperson, I think the point has been made about the issues of trying to manage this element, of the asylum seekers vis-a-vis the economic migrants. I don't think we've got a solution at present. And I must say, everybody is talking about it, but we've got to come up with a plan so that we can all together, harmoniously, find a way in which we can deal with that challenge. And of course, I'm not going to ask questions about the rest of the presentations that will still come, but it would have been nice if the Deputy Minister was going to be staying here with us and listen to some of the concerns throughout. But the point has been taken on her early departure at this stage. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Gang, please don't follow Honourable Marcelo's example of motivating and taking a bit of time, because we still have the other two presentations.
We were told we are going to be here until 4.
Today is our day for questions, please.
Thanks, Jane. Yes, maybe I should just start by saying that we visited this Cape Town office yesterday, and we were not really, speaking for myself, I wasn't really impressed at all. You have an office there where there's a, number one, there's a number of vacancies. Clearly there's also a backlog building up in terms of issuing of these refugee seeking permits on the one hand, and then the final or the interviews that has to take place for the status determination, and apparently they only come back after 6 months for some other reason for those interviews. And there's a backlog between these two building up, because more refugee seeking permits are issued than status determinations, interviews and so on taking place. So there's a specific problem in terms of staff. The second problem is that you haven't clearly not, decided all these offices now going to move to the border? Go all in, not going to move to the border. And I really think that you should, that the department should make that decision, because there's now uncertainty in terms of they don't have carpets there, these kinds of things that have been mentioned, and now the problem is, the question is whether these offices are going to be moved, whether the present offices can be refurbished properly, and so on. There's a lot of uncertainty about that. So that decision as to where you want to go with that matter will have to be taken. Thirdly, that office is not, and I don't know whether that is the rule for all the other offices, that's the only one I've seen thus far, but it's definitely not an example of a modern office.
No.
If we compare that, for example, with the Home Affairs office that you have here in Cape Town, I know it's a process and a program of refurbishing existing offices, but this is a modern office. You get the impression of relative chaos in terms of the lines, people lining up, and the whole system there is not, I mean, it's not really, it doesn't seem to work very well. There is clearly also certain matters that one should perhaps have a look at, again, as far as the acts are concerned, and we know that you are going to review these acts now in these days to come. But for example, the whole point that after someone has been denied refugee status, then they have 31 days to leave the country, but there's no real tracking taking place, and we don't know what on earth happened with those people. Do they stay on and become illegal immigrants, basically, what exactly happens to them? Then also the matter of, sorry, but it's a lot of points, but the whole matter of appeal, if they do not receive refugee status, then they have 30 days to appeal, and apparently these appeals take forever to be finalized. And that is a great concern and something we need to look at again. I'm almost done, I think, Chair. And then obviously you mentioned certain problems, such as, for instance, this whole matter of that these refugee or asylum seeker permit also gives people the right to work and study. I suppose there's been a court order or whatever in that regard. But, how do we solve these issues? What do we do in terms of that? Because it's clearly becoming a shortcut for a work permit. You don't need a work permit. You just go and claim asylum seek that you are a refugee. And then also, it seems that we got the impression there from the officials that they receive these people from even countries like Swaziland, like, what is it, Lesotho, and so on. And there's no clear guidance, it seems, from the side of the government to say, listen, people from, for example, Botswana shouldn't even be considered. That's not a country, where their life is at stake, and so on. So I think that guidance doesn't come through, and now they deal there with all kinds of asylum seekers from countries that are clearly not the kind of countries that we're talking about. Thanks.
Honourable Lavma.
Thank you, Chair. I really must, like the other members, beg your indulgence. This we understood to be our day to get our answers to the many questions that we have. Chair, I just must add to what Honourable Gaum has just said, where he's saying that there should be direction from the department saying that people from certain countries should not even be considered. My understanding is that is totally contrary to the law. It is totally contrary to international convention. You cannot do that. You have to allow people who say that they are asylum seekers to seek asylum and then make the decision after that. So that's really concerning. Chair, I appreciate the the presentation. I certainly was anticipating a presentation that was more than just on the physical, where the offices are, and how many offices we've got. A presentation that contained more information, for instance, on the operation of the centres. We read a lot about alleged mistreatment of or maltreatment of asylum seekers, alleged corruption, particularly by security guards at the centres. The lack of translation facilities is a massive issue where people are trying to make application and they don't speak the languages that the refugee status determination officers do. Also, there are numerous reports on very, very poor decision-making by refugee status determination officers, very, very poor country knowledge, very poor circumstance knowledge, etc. And we've been given no information on that. There are other issues with respect to management, and Honourable Gowan was referring to that. It's like a cattle station at Maitland. It really is, and all the cattle go in one queue. Just to give you an example, a query that I've been dealing with recently is a man who's got refugee status, he needs a refugee ID. The man cannot get to the front of the queue at Maitland. I eventually did get the manager at Maitland to organise an appointment with him, but the fact is he stands in the same queue as any asylum seeker coming for the very first time. It's not okay. It's just not managed properly as a proper office would be. I must agree with there entirely. Chairperson, I'm interested to know, with respect to the offices and the way that they operate at the moment, I know this is in the bill and not in the act, the five-day requirement, where people must report within 5 days. One of the obstacles to the five-day requirement is the setting aside of different days for different nationalities. If I am, for instance, let's say Somalian, and they only do Somalis on Thursdays, and I arrive on a Friday, I cannot do the 5 days. It doesn't say five Somali working days. So I'm just interested as to how that is actually going to be implemented. I think we do need clarity, and everybody involved, not just us, deserves clarity on whether all the border, the reception centres are going to be situated close to the border. The word nearest was put in the refugee amendment bill so that asylum seekers would have to report to the nearest refugee reception centre, which precludes Port Elizabeth in most cases, Port Elizabeth, Durban and Cape Town. Now those are the ones where you say looking for offices in Cape Town, and where in Durban and Cape Town the lease comes to an end towards the end of this year. Are they going to be closed down? If you put the offices along the border, it would mean that those people that have their permits and have to regularly then have those permits renewed would have to have them renewed along the border, which would imply that they would have to live along the border. You know, expecting then somebody to, because they can work, I mean, that's the current law and it hasn't changed with the bill, they would seek work perhaps in Durban, Cape Town, a hub, and they would then have to travel to the border. Alternatively, they would have to live there, and that is a real problem for asylum seekers. Chairperson, with respect to the Cape Town office court order, that court order, in fact, didn't only say that office must close. It said that there must be a certain number of, it's got a whole lot of conditions, a certain number of toilets, for instance, but it also gives a minimum staff level. And the minimum staff, which I think is 90 permanent staff members, can't recall offhand, but the minimum staff level in the court order is much, much higher than the staff level that currently exists. So the department is not complying with that court order at all. Chairperson, on page 3, it talks about the closure of the Crown Mines office, which I know has been a disruption, but it says it's been designed in such a way that there is minimum disruption and compromise to the services to the client. There were 3 separate reports in Times Live yesterday and today of people sleeping on the pavements overnight trying to get service, no toilets at the centre at all, and a comment on those reports would be welcome. Chair, this issue of economic migrants, I mean, we're not going to find the answer now quite clearly, but I certainly hope that the Refugees Amendment Bill will go some way to addressing this. I mean, one of the big problems at the moment is that Honourable Gum spoke about 6 months to get a decision. It's taking up to 5 to 7 years, in fact, from the time that somebody applies for asylum till the time that they are actually declared a refugee. In that time, somebody establishes a life. They marry and they become South Africans eventually. So it is actually quite easy. And I assume that the quicker process, I hope that the quicker process that the Refugees Amendment Bill should afford us will actually help to address that. I'm interested as to whether you keep records of economic migrants. I asked a question of the Minister recently about how many asylum seekers there had been over different periods at each of the centres, what nationalities. Her response was, we do not know that we are compiling the information. Now, I found that shocking. Why don't you know? Why don't you know how many you're getting? And do you specifically keep records of economic migrants? How many we're getting? Some of them are, just to give you a very quick example, I'm dealing with a gentleman at the moment who came through the refugee system. He's a professor of nuclear physics. He's actually somebody we like in South Africa, but he's on the point of being deported. So we do have a problem. We do have to address it. But do you keep records of economic migrants, what skills they might offer, etc.? Mr. McKay said South Africa is used as a transit to the world beyond. It's not substantiated at all. On what basis is this set? How do we know this? What records do we have to substantiate that? And then lastly, Chairperson, the absence of a regional approach in managing asylum seekers and refugees, I'm just so anxious about this approach because there seems to be a lot of ignorance of the United Nations Convention and international conventions generally. At what stage are the discussions at SADC, and would we at some stage get an update? I think we as people who are tasked with doing oversight and certainly on the legislative side are entitled to information on what is happening at SADC with respect to this regional approach. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I think we'll let the Department to respond to the questions that are raised, and then we'll have a second round of ends. Will that be okay? It will be Honourable Peterson Maduna, followed by Honourable Tibedi. Honourable Bosman will be the last. One other thing that is a concern to us is that we don't have an economic migrant policy. And it's for us, Honourable Members, to think as to how can we work towards this. I think we cannot always, put things to the department. We also have to start working on how can we maybe assist the department in ensuring that we look into this issue of economic migrants, because it is a challenge for us. Sure. We have people from Lesotho, people from Swaziland. There's no war in Swaziland. There's no war in Lesotho. And we have these people here. Well, we have been having people from Lesotho from long because they were working in the mines. But now they are moving in the inner part of the country, which is a problem. You will find them working in construction and other jobs, and they are always arrested for not having proper documentation. I think it is a problem that we need to look at as a portfolio committee. And one other issue that was raised, DM, was the issue of not having archives where we can put the documents, especially for foreign nationals. We don't have a policy, we don't have archives for that. Could I afford you the time to respond to questions together with Mr. McKay and some of the team members who are with you? Over to you, DM.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the guidance that you've provided. I do think you're correct. I think that there are many issues, obviously, that the refugee and asylum seeker management process raises, which are huge challenges, not just for this country, but for countries all over the world. If you look at various countries currently, you will find that there is a pulling back on some of the commitments that people previously would have adhered to in terms of both the 1951 and the 1967 conventions. Both in terms of the statutory international law as well as the customary international law, I think we as a country have not done that. You would know that since 2007, we have seen an astronomical rise in the number of asylum seekers in this country. And unfortunately, we have had to literally accommodate that astronomical rise on the run. And we try to do so to the best of our ability. But let me before I dive into answering some of the questions, maybe shift some of the burden to some of the officials. May I request the head of the province to deal with some of the detailed issues raised around toilets and other issues around staffing and vacancies. And ask Mr. Sons to deal with those issues. On the issue of keeping records in our asylum seeker management process, I think Mr. Hussey would be best able to respond to what the initiatives are currently. On the SADC issue, that is not just refugees, it's a whole immigration policy that is being discussed. I asked Mr. McKay to deal with that one. And perhaps Ms. Khazi can also deal with the filing systems and archives issue that you raised as well. The queuing system, again, I think the head of the province can deal with the queuing system. I think I basically will be able to deal with the rest of the issues. And may I just begin, Chairperson, with the comments by the honourable members from the opposition to say that we are here to deal very comprehensively with all and any questions they may have. And if it takes us longer to deal with it, we will stay until such time as those questions have been exhausted. What we did request was when we move to the next section that we be excused. So to the extent that members have questions even after this round, we will continue to stay. On the issue of the submission not being comprehensive enough in terms of the refugee system as a whole, it is my understanding that the department was specifically asked to deal with the status of the refugee reception offices, and that is why we have brought the presentation that we have brought. If at a later stage the portfolio committee wants us to delve into very specific detail on some of the issues that were raised here, we're very happy to deal with those issues. And I must say to you, they are really involved issues. One aspect, for example, the Section 22 could literally take us the whole day to discuss. So, and we're very open to that if Chairperson, the Portfolio Committee wants us to do that. May I begin by just saying that members must please remember that we have said previously in this committee that we are busy with an overall process, a whole review of the asylum management process, which is a medium to long-term project that has to run concurrently with some of the amendments that the Portfolio Committee has approved in the last while. So we have obviously to implement some of those amendments while re-looking and overhauling the entire asylum management process. And that will be done simultaneously And so a lot of the issues that members raise around particularly economic migrants will be looked at holistically, taking into account, of course, the whole immigration system as well. It is our view, for the benefit of members, that the immigration law and statutes are the umbrella legislation under which the asylum management process must reside. In other words, you can't have a system which we have currently de facto, where your refugee system, in a sense, trumps your immigration policy. It's just a topsy-turvy process that you're dealing with. And I think members are quite correct to point out that what you need to do is to develop a system in your immigration process that has regard to the factual scenario on the ground, in that we have, and I think when we talk about economic migrants, we must be very clear as to what we mean by economic migrants. We do not mean the nuclear scientists, and we do not mean people with skills. We are talking about people who have very little skill, who want to come into our country, and those are the people who are by and large making use of the asylum process, because they do not qualify in terms of the terms and conditions set up in our Immigration Act to qualify for work permits, running a business, and so on. In regard to the specific case raised by the Honourable Member around the nuclear scientist, I must say that that does sound very odd to me. I mean, I'm not sure if somebody is a nuclear scientist why it is that they haven't come through the immigration system. And if, of course, the person is a genuine asylum seeker, then he should have been dealt with as such. But if his matter was then adjudicated, and as you know, there's a strenuous process of adjudication, as much as people raise the issue of quality, which is one of the issues that the Portfolio Committee addressed when it dealt with the establishment of the Status Determination Committee, as I understood it, the argument was that the refugee status determination officers were not suitably qualified to take the decisions that they were taking. And as a result, the Portfolio Committee established the Status Determination Committees, where we hope to employ people who have greater qualifications, who are altogether more matured, and perhaps even at a higher salary level than is currently the case for the status determination officers. So the quality issue is hopefully going to be taken care of by the status determination committee. But in conjunction with that, as part of our overall review, we are looking at populating the system that is currently running at our refugee centers with the kind of data that members allude to. In other words, country-specific information, where at the touch of a button, whether it's the status determination committees or, in the meantime, while we're busy implementing the legislation, the status determination officers will be able to access information about a certain country at the touch of a button. So we would need to populate that with up-to-date research. And, of course, that means employing the right people who understand the country's specific dynamics that occur in various countries. It is quite correct that you can't, as a blanket, exclude certain citizens of a country, because one would have to accept that the international customary law does regard every single applicant as being a potential refugee until such time as that application is refused. Now, of course, that poses huge challenges. It poses huge challenges in terms of abuse and so on, and this is what more and more countries are finding, and this is why, as I said at the beginning, there seems to be a regression away from some of the underlying values of those protocols that, by the way, were signed at initially just after the turn of the Second World War. So what the conditions that permeated the globe at that stage and the circumstances that pertain now are really enormously diverse and different. But we're having to comply with all of those things because as a country we did endorse those protocols without any reservations. And that we can possibly say was probably a mistake because I think what happened was that we dived headlong into this and very enthusiastically and probably quite correctly into the international regime related to asylum seekers and refugees. But having done so, I think what we're seeing now are the remnants of that enthusiasm because there was no planning around things like refugee centers. We were then having to deal with this on the trot, as it were. And what we find now is that a lot of our refugee centers, as Mr. McKay said in his presentation, their placement was not necessarily thought out properly. We got premises where we could. And unfortunately, those premises were located in areas that are not necessarily the best kind of facilities when we talk about things like dignity of people coming in there, the zoning of the property, the land use restrictions relating to industrial areas and so on. So all of these are obviously catching up with us and we're going to have to now sit back and decide how it is that we're going to deal with it. Now obviously what you don't want to do, Chairperson, is you don't want to again react instinctively and just move on to the next industrial spot where you're not under court restriction. And that just causes further problems, and all you're doing is you're postponing the problems further down the line. So we've tried to give ourselves some space, and yes, the idea is to locate those centers closer to where the facilities are needed, and we believe very firmly that those centers should be at the points where we receive a lot of new applications. For two reasons. The first is the legislation that has now been promulgated by the Portfolio Committee, not promulgated but passed by the Portfolio Committee, does indeed restrict the number of days that new applicants have to come to the refugee centres to 5 days. And that has to be a consideration in terms of, I mean, if we're talking about genuine refugees, these are people who don't have the means of transport, who don't, and these are not the ones who come by busloads to our refugee centers. We know that there are busloads of tourist buses coming to our refugee centers carrying a whole lot of people. Unfortunately, as was pointed out, we can't turn them away. These are the people who would come by foot, walking many, many miles, many, many days, under excruciating circumstances, and who then arrive at our border posts and declare themselves in need of our protection. And those are the people we should be genuinely assisting as a country and directing our resources towards. However, and the reason we haven't finalized it is too prompt. The first issue is that there is a process of also rationalizing our ports of entry. And that's a separate process from the refugee process. Now, you don't want to necessarily locate your refugee center as a port of entry only to find that that has been rationalized. So we would need to work in collaboration with that process to establish exactly and precisely geographically where we would want those centers. Secondly, we also need to present a blueprint on what those centers would look like. In other words, we do not want to move these centers to the borders and then find that we are stuck with, again, a warehouse-type design which leaks in winter when it rains and creates all kinds of ablution and other problems and challenges for us. You would want to have a refugee center that is properly designed for that purpose, that takes care of both your employees' needs as well as people who have come under sometimes really ravaging situation. So you would want, for example, restrooms where people have been injured or are so exhausted that they need a medical assistance, for example, and so on. So that kind of a plan does not happen. I mean, we don't have those facilities lying around at our border towns, for example, waiting for us to occupy them. Those are things that will have to be planned, deliberately budgeted for, et cetera, et cetera. And so we don't expect that this is going to be a short-term process, that we're suddenly going to close up all these centers and move to the border and, you know, hooray, your problems are solved. But that's not going to happen overnight. It is a long-term process, and it is something that we have to be very deliberate about if we want to really solve some of the problems that members have raised, all of you. So that's the issue with regard to the location, Chairperson. On the issue of, and I've addressed the issue of the guidance on countries as well in the presentation, the issue of corruption. I want to be quite clear that both the Minister and I have on various occasions said publicly that we are very seriously committed, and the DG has as well on numerous occasions, said that we are deeply committed to eradicating whatever forms of corruption exist, whether it's at the refugee centres or anywhere else for that matter in the department. I think Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee would agree that we have acted in cases where we have found that there was some substance to those allegations. We have acted without fear, and particularly the DG has probably spent more time in court than he has in his office in recent times. But we have committed ourselves, and we've not only committed ourselves verbally, we've done so through our actions. However, I must say that we often find that there are allegations of corruption made, and when we ask people to commit something to writing to us in the form of a sworn statement, very often that does not materialize. Now, it's very difficult for us to act on very sweeping statements of corruption allegations and so on. And I trust that members would appreciate that we're not able to act simply because somebody says or comes anonymously to us to say that there is corruption. Of course, we investigate to the extent that we're able to. But equally, and this is an invitation to all members, to all honorable members, to say that if they are aware of any such activities, we have, as you know, also elevated since last year, late last year, the anti-corruption unit in terms of its status and so on. And so we're beefing up that capacity as well. So it is an invitation to honorable members to work with us in this regard, and particularly when it comes to refugees and the asylum centers. I think we must remember that we're dealing with enormously desperate people, and there is very fertile ground for corrupt activities, and we've noted that concern as well. I'm not sure if there are any further issues that I have not dealt with. I think I've dealt with most of them, and I want to hand over to DDG now to deal with these other ones.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Honorable Chairperson, excuse me, before I ask Yusuf to respond to the Maitland issues that have been raised, I think it's important to put into perspective the history of Maitland. For the benefit of the esteemed members, in 2006 we opened the Nyanga office. Some members will recall where we had a refugee reception center in Nyanga. In 2009, you were also ordered by the court to close that office. And we had to do it in haste. We had 30 days to close that office. And in that process, we procured another, or not procured, we looked for some other place to move to. With the help of Public Works, we were able to secure a site in Maitland, which is the site in front of the current site where the Maitland refugee reception office is. So the plan was to develop a state-of-the-art refugee reception center on that site. We had the plans, we had everything ready to go for the service provider or the contractor to start building that building. It would have taken us 6 months to put up the structure. Elaborate building, taking care of the purpose built for the process, the asylum seeker process. In the meantime, what the service provider did was, because we had nowhere else to move, he then hired for us the building where we are situated now, in that warehouse, to house us for the 6 months that it would take to complete that building of the front section, the purpose-built building. During that period, whilst we were negotiating this and moving into the premise where we are now, we already had a court or a businesses going to court saying that we want this business shut down. It did not make sense then for the service provider and the contractor at that time to continue with the building of the front, the purpose-built building that we would have built there. And it actually left us in limbo because we now had a site which we could not develop, and we were now in a site where we are now, where we are facing eviction. That is where we find ourselves with the office in Maitland. So it was never designed for it to be a permanent office in any way, nor was the warehouse and things as we see it now there purposefully designed for this purpose. It would have been a makeshift building to house us for a particular period of time until the building of our purpose-built building in terms of the asylum seeker process has been built on the plot just where you actually, which serves as a servitude now, where you actually move to the back. That was the plot that was procured for us. So I thought I would just put that into perspective and that give that history so that the house would have an appreciation of why we are in that area now. It was never meant to be permanent. It was never meant to house us for a long period of time. It was an interim measure that then, because of the court orders that we received and the court actions that was taken against the department, that we found ourselves now occupying. Yusuf, maybe if you could deal with the particular issues that you raised.
Thank you, Mr. Okay. Well, Chairperson, honourable members, thank you. I just wanted to add to what Mr. McKay is saying and taking it one bit even further is that from 1998 till 2006, we were in Customs House building here in town. So there we were also evicted because of the nuisance factor. So we've actually been evicted three times already, and we're under eviction order now. And since then, trying to acquire alternative accommodation has proved extremely difficult. We've gone to more than 10 buildings, Chairperson, but just when we had the zoning, no zoning problem or no security problem, the businesses in the area would know that we are looking at the site and then we'd receive objections. Or the other way around, the police security services would submit a report saying that the site is not ideal for a refugee center. So it's been extremely difficult to find a appropriate site for the refugee center, and this is where we are. And we want to start by saying that the current site is not ideal, like Mr. McKay is saying. And what makes it worse, Chairperson, is that we only have a month-to-month rental with the current landlord. And because of that, the landlord is not willing to do any maintenance on the building. So the holes in the roof, I've got a list of what are the, because we sent in a team to really do analysis over the last 2 weeks, not only on the building, Chairperson, but on the queues, but also on the security, on the allegations from the newspapers. We said, let us go find ourselves whether these are true or not. So there are people on site every day working with the security company to look at how they perform their jobs, but also whether there's abuses or corruption. But these are all work in progress. I don't want to make excuses. I think what the members saw is what gives a person sleepless nights, and it's really not humane for the asylum seekers and officials in the center. But what we've done so far, Chairperson and members, we have met with the union because our officials also wanted to go on strike because of the cold conditions working in the center. It's a concrete floor and asbestos ceiling. It's really a factory. The members were there and now it's really a temporary site that we're in 18 months now. It was meant to be 9 months, but it's now 18 months. So what we've done so far, we've brought heaters in, just to alleviate the coldness in the building. We've met with the unions, and the unions also realizes that it's a temporary site, so it's really difficult to do a huge investment from the department side into the building, knowing full well that you'd want to relocate from the building, and also we have occupational health and safety issues with that particular building. So I want to start with that premise, Chairperson, if you allow, and then go to the other areas. Let me start with the filling of posts. I have a list here, and I showed CFO next to me that the filling of posts, we have 85 positions at the refugee center. That's on the establishment. There are 47 of those are unfunded vacancies. We have 38 filled vacancies. These are 38 homebodies at the center. Yeah. We have 8 funded posts. These are funded posts through natural attrition that we can fill. We've only filled 3 of those, and these became vacant from October last year. Some became vacant this year. So there are 5 unfunded vacancies, Chairperson, and this is one area that we also need to say that let's speed up the filling of vacancies, because the unfunded vacancy, you cannot complain about capacity problems if you don't fill your own post. So as part of the action plan that I'm sitting here with myself, that I will also spearhead in the province, as head of the province, with the team, that we fill these vacancies as soon as possible. Some of these, like, for example, the operations manager, which is a very important position. This person runs operation at the center. It's been vacant. It was advertised in October. So as part of what we need to now fast track that we fill this position. So those are the vacancies that we've identified. There's also, through DG, and the department, when we reprioritize funding for compensation of employees, a certain amount, 53 posts were made available for the refugee center for the filling of for this financial year from July only when the funds become available. So I have discussed with CFO sitting next to me, and it's very strategic to sit next to CFO, Jefferson. So it's something that we just need to finalize how many of these posts with DG as well can we really just fast track to full. So on the filling of posts, it doesn't sound satisfactory, but we now at least know what we have to do, and there's a commitment that we will fast track these posts, Jefferson. Can I then go to the conditions? I just want to briefly also alert or inform the members about what of you saw on the surface what's broken, but if you go deeper, there's deeper problems as well at the center in what needs to be fixed and relating to the conditions. First is the broken roof in the waiting area. Now, if you come in there, you can see the holes in the asbestos, and it's clear that when it's going to rain, there's going to be water tumbling down. And why it's not been repaired, I don't want to go into it. It's just that we need to repair it now. We've got quotations to repair it. The landlord is not willing to spend a cent, so we will have to do it and deduct the money from the rental, the monthly rental we pay to the landlord. Give him notice that we're going to use your rental to fix these problems. And I just want to go down further down the list. There's doors that's broken, Jefferson, you saw. There's doors that's security where we keep files, etc., that doesn't have security doors. There's security gates at the inspectorate unit where they keep the belongings of those who need to be deported are kept there. There's no security door there as well. There's various fluorescent lights, just these normal lights that's broken, that we need to fix. The toilet on the first floor and ground floor for the staff, that needs to be fixed. The fortunate thing, Chairperson, is that we have 20 toilets. The medical officer recommended that we should have 20 toilets for the asylum seekers, and we do have the 20 toilets there at least. So that's one part that at least we could succeed in. We need to stone-proof windows. A week ago, a Tuesday, the Somali day, and they started stoning the building. So some extent you need to put stone-proof windows in your outside buildings because that happens, Jefferson. The shutter doors, because it's a factory-type building, there's shutter doors at the end. It's garage doors used to probably bring trucks in and out. It's open at the bottom, so when it rains, it leaks inside. That we have to fix as well. There's emergency doors, fire escape doors that doesn't even work. So those are the ones that we're also going to fix. But now that we know what the problems are and we have quotations, we then have a concerted effort to fix them. Jefferson, I can just say that on Friday is when we compiled this, so maybe if the committee comes back after a month or so, that some of these would have been addressed. But these are just what we picked up now recently. If I can go, Jefferson, then to the queues, because that is also something that's really apparent, and when you get there, you see people standing around. Like I said, Tuesday is our test day. The Somalians come very early, and that's the center manager tells me that on the Tuesday is where we struggle to service everyone. For every other day, we can help everyone by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But Tuesday is a problem because the newcomers can be some days to 1,000 newcomers coming. So it is a problem. But what's apparent is that information and signage is a huge problem at the center. And as a quick win, that's where we can make immediate impact. So to put a desk where what's the requirements? What do you have all your documents when you come to apply? These are the forms that you will have to need. So that is a quick win. Put a signage on a different service day, Jefferson. You'd know that different nationalities come on different days. Because if we just allow them all on the same day, there would really be chaos and crowd control problems and interpreter problems. Also, service categories. For newcomers, extensions, appeals, those coming apply for IDs, is you have signage and different marketed areas for those, like I think the honorable members picked up. And then also a big problem is there are agents and there are trespassers in the area. They don't come for asylum. They are just there probably to make some money, to corrupt practices. They are called agents. So it's to put a sign of, this is a sign that says admission to the center is reserved. You're only allowed on the center if you have permission from Home Affairs. And everyone on the site as a quick in is to have a big name tag, even security guards, the head of security, that nobody walks around there without a big visible name tag. And then we can enforce to keep these agents, these people that stay every day, keep them out of the site. But they are really there as a nuisance factor. And also interpreters, Jefferson, is to identify them clearly because that's also, you know, when you have people without identities moving around there, that's when problems start. we just on the security element, Chairperson, I thought it's important that I mention. I know Jim spoke about countering corruption, but we have 25 security guards there from Chippa Security Company, and they have a security manager there. Our person that used to work as security chief, he resigned in January, so he's no longer there. But we've now placed a full-time official from our other office in Belleville who deals with counter-corruption in the province. He's there full-time, on-site, and he monitors the security. He moves with the security guards. He watches their performance. He looks at the service level agreement, their daily activities, and observes what's happening. We've actually found now that he's so valuable in what he does, but one person is too little that we need to send another person out, because if it's one part of the building, something else happens in the other part of the building. So it's all, what I'm telling you, Chairperson, is work in progress, but it's what we are doing currently. So we also want to, we said the police need to come and help us as well. They will tell us that they're not responsible for power control, etc. But on Tuesdays when we have problems, so setting up meetings with the station commander in the area is one of their one of the areas we are focusing on, Chairperson. I think just on the security part, it's one of the quick wins that we say we need to get 25 security guards we're paying for. We need to get value from what they are supposed to do at the center. Yeah. The one thing that we also said, Chairperson, is we need to still discuss with DTG is the issue about our operating hours, that we just need to look at that as well. But it's something that we have in mind for the future. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Simon. Honorable members, do you want to ask Mr. McLean?
Chairperson, we thought we would deal with the other issues that we need to deal. Ms. Khasi will deal with the archive issues that the Honorable Chair raised, and then I will just deal last with the SADC issue.
Thanks, DDG. Honorable Chairperson, on the filing system at the refugee reception offices, there was a pilot project that was introduced in 2009, and the pilot project was really looking at developing a system to file all the records that we're having at the RROs. And that pilot project came to an end in 2009. We're now rolling it out to all the other refugee reception offices. And it has really assisted us in being able to file the records that we're having, but also being able to retrieve when we need the file for adjudication or any other thing that needs to be done on the file. But I need to say that the sharp rise in the volume of people or applicants that have been coming to our offices applying for asylum has also resulted in an enormous increase in the volume of data that we are having in our offices. And these are offices with limited space and also limited human resource capacity. And what we are doing right now is that the department, under the project is being led, or the process is being led by the department or the unit, the records management unit within the department, to see how best we can manage the records that we are having. They have done visits to all the reception offices to look at the status of record management in all our offices, and then be able to design a system that will assist us in that regard, that is on manual records. But we are also looking within our project, the NIS enhancement project, we are also looking at how best can we use the system that we are having to really improve the management of our records. So those are the two, that is the strategy that we are utilizing to try and improve our records management within the department. Thanks.
Thank you.
you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, the challenge that we have around asylum seeker management in South Africa can never be solved only by South Africans. The whole immigration issues that we have in South Africa, we do need the assistance of our neighboring countries and other countries to assist us with the movement and the movement of secondary people through their territories into South Africa. And we have already started with some binationals on this issue. We have at a ministerial level, our minister has talked with a counterpart from Tanzania, with a counterpart from Zimbabwe, as well as Lesotho, and we are in the process of setting up other meetings with Mozambique, Swaziland, and Botswana, for instance, for talks to take place between the at ministerial level, dealing basically with issues like the movement of undocumented people through those territories into South Africa, and how do those countries deal with undocumented people moving through the territory? To deal basically with issues as well as of integration of systems, looking at how we can integrate and assist each other with information of movements of people through their country. There's also the issue, Chairperson, with regard to the movement of Somalis into South Africa. We, not only Somalis, but other nationalities as well, in refugee camps in Kenya, in Tanzania, and the countries further north. Because what we have seen is that these camps are empty, and people are moving south into South Africa, but they are already recognized refugees in those particular countries. So we need to be able to share databases with these countries so that we are able to see whether these people have been granted refugee status in those countries already before we start a process in South Africa that has already been taken care of in somewhere else. The other issue as well that we are looking at is basically sharing information. For instance, within the Somalis, Chairperson, you get what is called a Tanzanian Somali. You get a Somali Somali. You get a Kenyan Somali. Now, these are all people that they have Somali origin but have been living in Kenya and Tanzania all the years. And so they are actually nationals of those countries but come to South Africa seeking asylum as if they come from Somali. Now, because if we don't have this interaction with the different countries where they assist us in terms of information sharing, there's no way that we would be able to deal with this challenge where we have asylum seekers coming to South Africa who are not genuine asylum seekers, as we stated before. So it is important then at a bilateral level that we start these engagements and then move these bilateral engagements into the multilateral arena within the SADC area. And currently we do have an immigration subcommittee at the SADC level, which discusses issues of cooperation on immigration issues, the integration of systems, the sharing of information, and also the harmonization of laws within the SADC, refugee law within the SADC region, so that we deal with it commonly. So that one country does not stand out and is the pull factor because they are dealt with differently in the other parts of the of the country or in the other parts of the region. So there is those subcommittees where these discussions are taking place in terms of how we harmonize these laws. We also have a refugee commissioner's subcommittee of the immigration subcommittee, which also deals with some of these policy issues within the SADC region. The discussions have started about a year and a half ago, so they are actually still within the SADC area in its embryonic stage, and we hope that if as we strengthen our bilateral cooperation, it will also strengthen the multilateral engagement at the SADC level. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
We have coffee outside, members and our guests. I think it's going to be impossible for us to break for coffee because people still have their hands up. I propose that people will go out, get the coffee and drink inside, and we continue with our meeting. Will that be in order? Because it's going to get cold.
No, mine is not a question. It's only to ask that my question be responded to. I've asked questions, no one
the
has responded.
The DG is still coming to respond to some of the questions.
I think it is important to say this matter is a pity that maybe get the presentation looked at the offices. This is a matter which is in the JCPS cluster level. I think that is important. Where as a department there are issues which are strategic at that level because we can't deal with this thing in isolation as a Department of Home Affairs. We need to deal with them holistically. But when we're preparing the bill now, it's raising too many questions. But we didn't come with those issues. What are the problems around the whole refugee, in fact, around the immigration in totality? And then what are we doing as a department to resolve those issues? One of the strategies which we're talking about, which is really, though is when I have some pains in it, which I've been explaining. Let's take the issue of moving all these offices to the borderline. But that is a strategy, it's coupled, though I'm not preempting the chair as well, the issue of the WMI online, which we are coming to it after this presentation to say, why did the department settle the WMI online? Was able to make sure that these systems which we are talking about, tracking systems which we are talking, must be in place. The integration between civic systems and immigration must come out of that system. So by that, and even when we say we'll be moving these things to the borderline and then the people want to renew their permits, doesn't mean they must travel physically to go to the borderline because we'll be having a system which will be able to deal with that. So that's something like that. The problem now which we are having is that the issues which are at a high strategic level, we did not bring in the presentation to say this is what was the thing that we are dealing only with this matter. But that's what we have to deal with it. Coming to the issues which were raised, Chair. So I think when we're bringing the budget in the portfolio committee, we did indicate that we have made sure that all the operational budget for our processes, we have dealt with it. Let's make an example of the telephones. There is no office in South Africa now which pays its own telephone because of that problem. All the telephones are centralized so that we make sure that we, so Telkom, build us and then we pay for all the offices. And then after that, because we're having these problems where offices are not able to pay for their own telephone. The issue of the border management agency, as an example, is a cabinet decision, which now when we're coming here, we're not coming with it, but we're able to say which we're participating as a cluster in that process to say how it's going to be dealt with. What are the intentions of a border management? But one of the decisions which have already been implemented, defense is in the borderline as we speak. And they started from on this line of Mozambique, and they will be going right through up to the end. The issue of the maritime borderline is also dealt with it at that level because we can't solve the issues of the refugees by solving the offices. That's what we're saying, that we need to solve those high-level issues, then it will be able to deal with the issues. Then the issue that really we accept that our reception offices are not conducive
for people to go and work on them.
Mm.
But the approval, as we said, if you are on a month-to-month basis with a landlord, cannot put a particular saving on that. In fact, if you look when we're closing Crown Mines, I mean, we're saying Crown Mines, that's why we didn't contact it. To say, even if you go and find another office in Joburg, it's not going to help you, because that nuisance factor is there. If it is in the city center, there's nothing you can do with it. So, Chair, what I wanted to say is, and then the issue of vacancies as well. Chair, this year we came to the parliament and said to our portfolio committee, for 2011-12, we've got 1,076 positions. And those positions, we spilled them and say where is going where and all that. And that's why now we've got an MTEF process to say in year one, you will do this. In year two, you will do that. So all those things are built in. So hence, Chair, what will solve our problem of refugees is to deal with this policy. Even the policy on economic versus asylum, as the Chair said, in our strategic plan is there for this year to say that's what we'll be doing. We'll be coming to Parliament and brief the portfolio committee how far we're moving with this, because we need assistance of the committee at the end of the day. So, Chair, these issues really is a pity that for us we only looked at the because maybe we should have, as the DM has said, there is a process in the department, that's why DM is now, which deals with the whole issue of the asylum seekers, what the proposal, want to deal with the backlogs and all that. That presentation is there, but it's a pity that we didn't bring it. Thanks. I hope I've responded on the question.
Thank you, DG. Were all your questions responded to?
Yeah,
okay. In fact, we have other people who we had noted.
Yes, but I'll.
It's Honorable McDuna Peterson, Honorable Tibedi, Honorable Bosman. But before I give her, the issue of the manager for that office, the head, Mr. Skakane, who is suspended.
Yes.
Could maybe we get the light as to what happened there? But can we first let the honourable members come up with their questions? You will answer at the end. Honourable Maduna Peterson? Honourable Tibedi?
Well, thank you, Chair. I've been hearing colleagues talking about their experiences on their visit to a refugee reception office yesterday. I was just wondering, because they were saying the situation there is not conducive and so on. I was just wondering whether it is it as cold as this room?
Good question.
But let me just make a point that, you know, I think the issue of a point was made about the perceived better livelihood, which creates unmanageable kind of demands. And I'm asking myself a question as to whether, as we move along, because surely there are some international laws that guide us to take certain positions as far as these matters are concerned. So I'm just wondering whether are we in a position to balance, you know, our wishes with reality, because I think there's a difference between, you know, goodwill, because we are such a nice nation, we think we can accommodate everybody. Now, if we take that route in the long term, what will be the end result? Because I think we need to ask these questions, because if we don't ask these questions, then we continue with the route of unlimited, uncontrolled intake, disregarding our capacity as a country to absorb those kind of pressures. What will be the end result? Well, the end result, in my view, will be a scramble for resources, will be stampede, will be lawlessness. That will be the end result. I don't think that's the route that we want to pursue. And that does not make us
bad or doesn't make us people who don't comply with international law. It's simply that we approach things in a regulatory manner. So I'm arguing, therefore, that I think we need to take a long-term view on these matters, buy it according to how much we can chew, because I think that's all the real to do that. And you see, the budget that we have as a country, it can't even take care of the old inhabitants, people who pay taxes, taxpayers. But I think we're grappling with issues of how do we then just willy-nilly accept everybody. I think it's a very dangerous path that we are taking, and I think we need to begin to sit back and say, much as we are willing to help, we must do so without creating a problem internally within the family of South Africans. That's the first point. The second point I want to make here is in relation to, I think the issue about SADC has been responded to. Well, I was going to make a point that I think it's not a matter that a department on its own can deal with. I think the response has been given adequately. So, the last point I want to make is in relation to, you know, this state of the art centers and so on. I don't know, and pardon me, because in most instances I'm not able to attend your meetings just because of I might have lost out in the process. But I'm of the view that no input is less important in a meeting where all of us are seeking to find solutions. Now, if you talk about state-of-the-art centers, I want to balance it with a view that says, we want to make the problem of refugees a permanent feature.
But it is.
In our lives, as South Africans. I want to pose that question, because my view should be that as we grapple with the challenges, we must make sure that we also struggle to create conditions where these people come from, whereby they will have to stay where they not come to other countries to seek better life. It may not be 100% sure, but I think we can deal with limited number of people who come into the country, as opposed to a flood of people that would. So my view is, I would argue for decent centers. You know, state of the art might end up being at some point, you know, white elephant, and we're becoming back again here and say, what do we do? What do we do with this center? So I'm saying we must deal with these challenges. Lastly, on a very light note, I want to congratulate the department for having succeeded in getting the National Assembly to unanimously adopt your budget. I think it shows that a team seated around this table, much as we can differ on certain things, but we are able to see the bigger picture with one eye. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Honourable Bosman. Honourable Lovemo, do you still have a question, or was some of the questions not answered? If I may get clarity before we give Honourable.
Yes, I would like to go back to some of the questions that weren't, I don't believe, adequately addressed.
Okay, Honourable Bosman.
Thank you, Chair. I think the previous speaker covered most of the things I was going to say. But Chair, one would say we, if it was me, we were not going to go into what we have done now, the details. Because we wanted the status report on refugees reception offices, not only the Western Cape office. We said offices. And I am saying, because we failed, maybe there was miscommunication between the office and the department, not the detailed information is here. And we are unable, therefore, to deliberate on what we had actually requested. Basically, because if you look, almost all these offices have got problems, and we can't then isolate one office from the other. We need to have that holistic report and then deal with the whole report as is. And I think, like it has initially been said, that I think our intention is not to ensure that we bring as many asylum seekers as we can not even accommodate. But we are trying to say where there is offices, there should be conditions as well that are acceptable to the people that are using that particular office. That's what we are trying to say. But, Terry, the other thing that comes is to say, what are the relations between the senior managers and the junior managers? What are the relations between the department and management and the unions? Because some of the things we're discussing here are issues that were supposed to be raised at the level of management meetings, at the level of trade unions meetings. And we would then be deliberating on the reports if those particular reports come. As we need that particular detailed report, we should also have that particular issues that are raised in those management meetings, because we need not encourage a situation where people will only raise issues when they see politicians visiting centers and not raise those particular issues with their immediate supervisors or managers, because then we're going to take a longer time to do things than it is supposed to. I know yesterday I asked a question in that particular oversight meeting to say, is the DG aware of some of these things you are raising with us? And we never got an answer. Because then there was, you see, I'm just acting, I've just been here now. But the question is, if management is not talking to each other and they would want to create a problem as if there is a problem, then we're not solving a problem. Whether we can sit here and talk, that would not assist us. People must know that they have a responsibility to raise issues as well within their, that's why there's those structures that would make them meet from time to time to discuss areas, I mean, problematic areas, and see to it that things are being done in accordance to what they are supposed to be doing. Lastly, Kay, is the fact that we spoke about the office space, what accommodation, I think. I don't know what to say. But is it viable that we, for instance, have made an example with the Cape Town offices, and we are aware of the month-to-month contract? Is there anything that can be done there? Let us be honest. Until we resolved the issue around either leasing or having a permanent office somewhere, we are not going to be able to do anything there. Otherwise, we would then do, I think what was said when we were there was that the lower windows are going to have a security work. That thing is going to be put there. We understand about the garage doors and what is you, which is also a question. Someone is running from his country because he feels he's not secure. He comes here and makes our own people not to be secure as well. And we still say we want to help that person. What are we doing here? I think we need to also get to that. And like the DG has said, some of the things we can't do as Home Affairs alone. We need other related departments to also work with us towards achieving their resolve. And it is important that we also give. We knew that after this amendment, there's going to be pressure on us to see some of the things as if they are just coming now, and they have since been there. But we need to give the department space as well to be able to plan properly and be able to bring that particular plan to us, and be able to be, so that we guide that particular plan for better and long-term implementation of that. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Lovemore, your question should be motivated, please. Let it be direct.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to go back to the issue of records. I mentioned, maybe not motivated. I did speak about the question to the minister. I asked about records of economic migrants, particularly. Reference was made to upgrading in some way a pilot project or rolling a pilot project out to all refugee reception offices, and also looking at the National Information System to try and improve records management. But no detail was given on that at all. Chair, just very quickly on Cape Town, and the same applies to other offices. The Cape Town office, I am almost 100% sure that the Department of Labour would close that office down. If they were there, they would close that office down because it is not safe for the people who work in it, and nor is it safe, as the law requires, for the people that it serves. So I'm actually quite shocked. I understand that officials are scared, you know, few and far between, and good ones particularly, but I'm actually quite shocked that after 18 months, Chair, we have a presentation of a list that was compiled last Friday of problems that are now going to be addressed and quick wins that could possibly be addressed. So really, I hope those quick wins are very, very quick. Chairperson, I'm finishing off. I do realise, and my colleagues are quite correct in that we are moving away from into the refugee, the whole asylum seeker management sphere. So it is clear that we need a presentation on that. Chairperson, there's been a lot of reports of Somalis being turned away at the border, which, according to our current law, is not allowed. I'm glad to hear that they are arriving in Cape Town. I hope that they are not being turned away at the border, but perhaps we can get a categorical answer to that, because there are many newspaper reports and reports by NGOs of Somalis being turned away at the border, and I'm not sure on what basis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. These are the last hands, Honourable Members, we are now giving to the Department to respond so that we go to our next presentation. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Again, I'm going to field out a few of the questions so that our officials can start preparing their responses. About the suspension of the centre manager, I take it that was the issue that was directed specifically at the Cape Town centre. That, and together with the last Friday issue, quick wins and so on, I think are probably related, so you'll deal with that. You'll deal with the suspension, DG. Okay. The issue of people being turned away at the border, DG McKay will deal with. And I think the economic migrants as well, what the report says. Let me say to the Honourable Tibede, this room is not half as cold as the refugee center.
No.
it's quite a problem. And I think that when we talk about accommodation that meets our needs, we must remember that we're not talking state of the art at all, Chairperson. And if I mentioned state of the art, that would have been a wrong turn of phrase. What we are looking at is simply humane conditions under which to operate, both for our employees as well as people who are in need of dignified assistance. And I don't think anybody can suggest that the accommodation that we now have in these makeshift warehouses will meet any kind of humanitarian standards. So we are very concerned about this, not just, as I say, for the sake of wanting to build bigger and better empires, as it were, but just to meet ordinary standards of human and humanitarian requirements. So we're not talking state of the art, we're talking decent accommodation. We may, of course, have And I must stress what I said before about the relocation of these centers, because it's come up again. We are looking at the relocation of those centers. That much is we can commit to, and we can say to you that that is where we are. What we are unable to say at this stage is precisely where. Because, as I have explained to you, we are busy not only scouting. This is not an exercise where we just suddenly, you know, roll a pin around a map and say, well, there we're going to be. So this is a question of many factors. The first, of course, being where are the biggest ports of entry where the refugees are entering into. So that's your first consideration. The second consideration is, will there be the kind of land available or facilities available? We have to actually send our teams to those remote parts of our country to actually have a look and scout in those towns as to what is available and whether in fact those would be suitable, and if not, whether there's land available for us to then erect our own structures and so on. So all of those feasibility reports will be coming back to us, and only once we have those will we be able to come and firmly say we are going to now relocate to a particular place. So I think that must be quite clear. Of course, given the issue with regard to Cape Town, and now we also have been warned about PE, I think that it may not work out as neatly as we hope. So in other words, we don't want to come here and say we will only move if we find suitable accommodation that is on all fours with our requirements and so on. It may be that the court orders us to move in PE tomorrow, and we have to then take adequate steps and so on. So I don't want us to be misunderstood about that either. We're doing the best that we can under the circumstances and as quickly as we are possibly able to do. The honourable members raise a very interesting question, and one that requires enormous amount of contemplation, and it's put in different ways. Are we now seeing refugees as a permanent factor in our country? Do we actually subscribe to something that says that we are now entrenching the system in our country? Is this not a short-term matter? I think here we must take into account various issues, and this is, we must admit that our systems have not been the best. As I've explained, there's a particular history to that, and we have not, since 1998, sat down and reflected what is working, what is not working, where are the abuses, and so on. But to take the system and the failures of the system and try and say, well, because of the failures of the system, we have all of these challenges, and therefore perhaps we should even as a country reconsider our obligations at an international level. I think that's taking it a step too far. We must be quite sure that our commitment as a country since the advent of democracy has been very much in line with this notion, the notion that we are part and parcel of a family of nations. It comes down to what kind of world you want to live in. Absolutely, if you ask most countries, especially ones that are struggling with all of the challenges that we are, social, economic problems and so on, most countries will say, look, we would prefer not to engage in the refugee system. But there's a bigger principle at stake. And the principle is that you do not want statelessness. Wars are a reality. Persecution is a reality. Whether you're in Zimbabwe, Rwanda, or Egypt, or Libya, or wherever it is, those things exist. Ordinary people like you and me get caught up in those wars, in those battles. and people's lives get disrupted. Now, if you are such a person, since 1951, after the Second World War, the global community has come together and everybody shares that burden. I think the issue that D.D.G. McKay raises and other people is about that aspect, is about sharing the burden. What we have currently in our country is a whole range of issues that we obviously have to take up with other countries, our neighbors, our partners on the continent, arising out of the sharing of that burden. I think members would know that a lot of the times people are traversing various countries on the continent, undocumented very often, just making their way to South Africa, when in fact there are safe countries where they can apply for refugee status. And so that sharing of the burden, when we talk about that, it's about all countries coming to the party. So that's the one aspect. The second aspect is, of course, our system. We cannot blame anybody else if we don't fix up our system. And our system is really enormously problematic, and we would need your assistance more than anybody else's to fix it up, hence the review. And when we do come to the Portfolio Committee with revised legislation and so on, we do hope that we will address some of the very pertinent issues that members have raised around the weaknesses in the system as well. And thank you very much, Honorable Tibete, for congratulating us on the budget. We would, of course, have preferred to have a bigger budget, I'm sure, than DG. But thank you nonetheless. The issue of the status report on reception centers, I think it's a well-taken point. We were not, unfortunately, communicated in that manner. We thought that it was linked with the closing down of Crown Mines, and that the input you had wanted was where are we with all these reception centers pertaining to whether in fact they're going to close down or relocate and so on, and which is why we prepared a long time. But clearly we can do that. We can prepare such a report and submit it to the chairperson, and then if you do need us to come and speak to that report, we can also do it. And the chief director is here. She has noted that issue, and we will then submit such a report to the Portfolio Committee. I am sure that others will speak to the issue of junior and senior management speaking to each other and so on, but just to say that they are, it is my understanding that we had instructed that they are weekly teleconferences between the center managers on day-to-day issues with regard to management, staff, and other issues. I think that takes care of all of the questions. I'll now hand over to D.D.G. McKay.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honourable Chair, through you to Honourable Tibedi, I think it's myself that used the hyperbole of state-of-the-art offices. But from what we have now, anything decent is state-of-the-art. And I think it is in that vein that I mentioned, Honourable Tibedi. If I may, with regard to records of economic migrants and at our asylum seeker centers, Honourable Chairperson, we do not keep records of economic migrants. Our economic migrants that we do keep records of is within our Immigration Act. They are there. The issue of what you do and what your skills are is not a material issue in determining status, refugee status. So we do not ask what is your skills, and based on your skills we issue you refugee status. So we do not have record within the asylum seeker process of what would be called economic migrants. And for the reason that it is not a material issue in determining status of a person, a chaplain, we might, in our discussions, in really looking now the way we manage asylum seekers, we might want to have a look at our NIIS system, actually recording and asking the question, and ask, but not to be used for the determination process, but to be used for record purposes. And we will look at seeing that we actually put in a field in our NIIS where we can capture that, so that we could have the record of those skills. A chairperson, with regard to people being turned away at our borders, daily we turn people away. Daily, people come to our borders, airports, seaports, land ports, that do not have documentation. They are not necessarily Somalis. They are all nationalities. And if they do not comply with our Immigration Act, we turn them away. Because they are not allowed to enter into the country. If no one states there is a stated, they state that they would want to claim asylum in South Africa, they are turned away. Otherwise, those that do are issued with a Section 23, and they are allowed to proceed through the country. What is happening at Bybridge as well is exactly that. People that turn up at our ports of entry that do not have the necessary documentation to enter our country, we turn away. It is a principle, immigration principle. All countries do that. Also, we ask the question from our neighbors, how did this person get through your country without a document? Because it is a risk to our national security. And if you just allow a free flow of people through your country, then it is a risk. So did they report to the Zimbabwean officers, for instance, saying that they do not have documents and they travel through? Or is it when they come to our side that they throw away documents and want to proceed without documents? So we need to, there's a behavior change that needs to take place here, Chairperson. So the people that are turned away are not Somalis. There are people that are turning up at our ports of entry without the necessary documentation to be allowed into the country. We've just had a serious case of someone that was so-called Al Qaeda member that had supposedly had our documents or passports. So these are serious issues and risks to our national security, and we need to see that we are certain who we allow into this country and whom we do not allow into the country. So it has all to do with the implementation of our Immigration Act, that people are allowed into the country or not allowed into the country. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, let me deal with the issues, the management issues. Chairperson, in the department, we took a decision that the issue of efficiency in the department is a priority to us. We are not, as maybe has been viewed, that we're only suspending people who are involved in issues of corruption. That is not only what we're looking at. We are there to serve the public. If our officials are doing things which are less than that, and we found out that those issues are based on just issues of recklessness, we have to deal with that matter. Chair, making an example, we have allocated positions, which we're saying here, 1,076 posts. And those positions, Chair, are not at a global level. Those positions are per office. That manager has got a responsibility to fill those positions without referring to anybody. And we pick up that positions are not filled. So we have to act. So the issues of Maitland are the issues of efficiency. How can a door not be fixed, Chair? When the budget is there, everything is there. But if now as a department, when I be saying, we accept that, we never change this department. chair, we have to change the Department of Home Affairs to deliver an efficient services to the public. So that's what we're engaging in. So the reason for that is because there were those issues. It's not about corruption, I want to put it clearly. It's not about issues of corruption. It's about issues of management, which want to follow it up and deal with it. And it's not only in the office of Maitland. In the department is something which want to look at it and deal with it. Sir, we put our numbers in the offices across the country. When a member of the public called and said, DG, I'm here, I'm not served, we follow that one chair up to the level of disciplining people. So I think it is important that we are doing this for that reason. The relationship, chair, which we have with the unions is good, chair. In the department, we have never had, chair, a strike which is based on us not talking properly with the unions. The unions were taking them on board on this agenda of transforming the Department of Home Affairs. In fact, when the Secretary General of COSATU was saying, if in the department people are not coming to work, people are not doing this, and the unions are not going to support that, that gave us a leverage as the departments to start dealing with the issue. So, Chair, that is the issue. Now, how, if you recall, Chair, we came here in the Portfolio Committee as well and say, our management structure of Home Affairs was on a zonal basis, where Western Cape and Eastern Cape were combined under one manager, and others said that thing can't work. Who must you ask if things are not going right in a particular unit? Then we change it. That's why now Mr. Yusuf, who is the provincial head of Western Cape, is talking to what is happening in the refugee center. It's not somebody sitting at headquarters who is not here. So we changed that. And also we said in our operational model, we wanted to work from an office, so that head of the office has got certain delegations, has got a budget, he must run or she must run that office. If things go wrong, we ask that particular head of the office. If that cannot be assisted, we go to the provincial head, like Mr. Yusuf now, to say why these things were not escalated, why these things were not resolved. But yet, Chair, people, they will always say, we do not know. Then, based on that structure, Chair, on a monthly basis, Mr. Yusuf, as the head of the province, we meet every month so that we can understand what are the issues happening in the province. Secondly, on a quarterly basis, all the managers of the refugee centers and all at a director level, we meet. And then we also meet with the assistant director up so that we can make sure that communication is clear. But the people will always say once they see and says, no, we do not know and all that. But yeah, unfortunately, that one again was the person who is acting that we have to take that particular decision. But yeah, sir, what we are making sure is that within 60 days, that matter must be closed so that now we can be able to put, based on the outcome of the disciplinary process. But, Chair, what we are saying is that we are really the department, based on these post-management processes we are putting in place, we are trying to make sure that are we going to be able to respond to solve this. There's nothing, Chair, which frustrates us as a situation that a person will go and say, I applied for an ID for 2 years, nothing coming up. And that same person calls me on my phone or calls the minister or calls the deputy minister, and that matter is resolved within 2 days. The same matter, and you can't find what was the reason that they were not done. Hence, we decided to say, whatever it means, our numbers must be there so that we are able to make sure that if this money, if we cannot change how the Department of Home Affairs works, we must forget about it. So, Chair, we really putting these processes to make sure that we're able to achieve that Yes, they're not going to yield results immediately, but they're going to also have some pain where other managers are going to be dismissed, or anyone, not on the basis that I was corrupt, but I'm going to be dismissed on the basis that I could not deliver what I was supposed to deliver.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I'm sure all their questions have been answered. And time is also against us. Honorable members, would like to thank the DM and the officials who came to respond to our questions, especially with regard to the mainland office that we visited yesterday. Mr. McKay, Mr. Solomon, please, we need security in those offices because we were told that there is burglary going on in that office. I'm sure that has happened 3 times in that office. So please let us have proper butler proofing. I'm not sure whether it's butler proofing or it's a warm body security system that can be there, you know, 24 hours to ensure that our documents are safe. We have read in the papers of an office of whom an unofficial Home Affairs office that was operating somewhere. And I think they got this stamp because of butlery, or there was maybe communication. I don't know whether there were people in chemistry and the other office who were colluding with the people who were operating that office. So it's very important that we have proper security for our offices to ensure that our documents are safe in the offices. There's one other issue that was raised yesterday. We forgot to put it as the members were asking questions, the issue of the UN passport for refugees. We were informed that the UN cannot afford anymore to pay, if I put it correctly, for the passports for refugees, and it's going to be done by the country. It is one of the concerns that we have as to Kanti, what is the UN's role with regard to the issue of refugees. Should each country bear the cost alone? What is the role of the UN? Why can't they help us? You know, we get worried when we do our oversight work. Yesterday, I was asking members whether is there anybody left in Somalia. Seriously. You see the huge numbers of people. We are talking of Cape Town alone. It's only Cape Town. You go to Pretoria, you get the same number of people. It's huge numbers that the people are dealing with daily. You ask yourself, are there any people left in those particular countries? And really, this intake, for how long are we going to continue with this as South Africans? Is it not going to affect our resources, the economy of the country? I think as a portfolio committee, we need to you know, sit down and discuss this openly, whether how long are we going to continue with the intake and without the support from other countries. You know, we see on TV Spain, you know, turning these refugees back to their country. And here we'll be told of human rights laws, you know, the constitution is against that, you know, all sorts of excuses. And here we have people who are living in poverty daily, people who are unemployed. I don't, we've never enjoyed our freedom as South Africans. We've never enjoyed our freedom. We got it in 1994,
and we had floods and floods of refugees or undocumented people in the country. And we always, you know, want to play it as if, no, there's nothing like that. It's refugees and, oh, yes, we have refugees. But we also have wrong people entering our country. Like the, we were reading about the Rwanda war criminal person.
Yes, what is he doing?
Yes, it's in
refugee.
The newspapers. And they are all here. What are we saying about that? Must we, you know, let all these war criminals come into the country? And then when we were supposed to, you know, tell them to go back, then we are told, no, it's human, we are violating the human rights laws and all that. No, honorable members, I think it is important that we do need to sit down and get advices as to how do we address some of these issues that are facing us as a country. It is important that we, you know, become cool-headed and sober and see as to how we can deal with this. Honorable Lovemore, I didn't want to...
Let me rather, instead of giving you the opportunity,
thank you, Honorable Matthew, because you've explained... Okay, sorry, I'm not going to ask a question. If you don't need to give me the opportunity to speak, then I'm going to use it as a point of order. I'm very disturbed by what you are saying and by in any way associating ourselves with what you are saying. What you are saying is that since 1994, we have not enjoyed our freedom because we've had these floods of foreigners who have utilized resources that should have been available to South Africans. Now, that is what... That's exactly the kind of attitude, Chair, and I hope that you can clarify what you're saying, that is causing the new wave of xenophobic attacks that is happening right now, and that NGOs are warning is going to escalate. We cannot, from a parliamentary portfolio committee, be saying we don't want people from outside of South Africa's borders here. Thank you. Would you clarify, please?
Since 1994, we have had an influx of people coming into the country. And I said documented and undocumented people. And also that it impacts on our economy. We have, you know, the documents that you will get from Parliament. I'm sure the last time that issue was made, it was in 2008, stating how much the country is losing out on corruption. The insurance, how much are insurance claims being made because of wrong ID documents. The banks also, how much banks were losing because of people using wrong documents that somebody else's documents. So that is why I am saying it impacts on our country. We've read of people buying furniture, cars, using somebody else's document. And we are reading about all those things daily in newspapers. I am not saying people must not come into the country. People must come to the country with proper documents, knowing that these are asylum seekers, knowing that these are people who are recruited to come into the country because of the skills that we have. Honorable Magluwa.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to open it for debate. I just want to raise something of grave concern regarding the conditions, specifically regarding at Bait Bridge. Also, while the DM is here and Mr. Lekay, we experienced tremendous problems at Bait Bridge with baboons. And we are sending conservation people out there, and it seems that we are not winning the battle. At some stage, some of the baboons make monkeys out of the conservation people there who try to assist So it is really, really a problem for us, and I would like really that the DJ must really try and assist us, because a major problem, the monkeys and the baboons are stealing the stuff from the lorries there, from the cars, and grab the woman bags, etc.
And where is this?
It's Bait Bridge. But the lucky knows about.
Oh, but I'm trying to get as to how does it come to this committee. I think,
Chairperson, we are. Let me just assure the members that we are now busy training our. How to deal with baboons. Not just any baboons, mind you, the thieving kind.
Yeah, thank you, DM. Honourable members, I'm sure we've come to the end of our session, and would like to thank the DM and the officials for their presentation. And the minister had phoned to apologize that he won't be with us. He wanted to be part of the meeting. Unfortunately, he couldn't be with us because of other engagements. Thank you, DM. I'm sure you could be excused so that you deal with the other part of your work in your office. And then the second item, Mr. McKay.
I don't know what to say. Yes, ma'am.
How long did you record the bill for?
I was at the side.